Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:19 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is June 16th and the Federal Reserve meeting delivered a little surprise. And I think the move was greatly exaggerated by investors, but what we've seen is that the Federal Reserve has decided that they think they will raise rates twice before the end of 2023. So that would suggest that they're going to hold their purchases for at least the next quarter, maybe even a couple of quarters, and then they'll start tapering and perhaps cutting the number of bonds that they're buying by maybe 10 billion a month for a year. And then they might raise interest rates at some point towards the beginning of 2023 and wait a while and then do it again. And that's of course assuming that everything goes according to plan. So 2-year yields were up about 4 basis points, and it looks like a dynamic move because they haven't gone anywhere for a year. But then we can also think about the size of the decline that we saw in 2020, and it looks like a lot, where we get this big decline from 1.5% to about 0.25%, and in a very short period of time. But when we go back and look at history, well, we can then see that we have this extraordinarily long period of time where interest rates have been coming down. And we can also think about the size of the tightening cycles. So tightening cycles have been getting larger since the beginning of the 2000s. Of course, they're successively coming from lower levels. So we can think about the tightening that began in 2003, and it went from 1% to 5% on the yield, and the Federal Reserve also raised interest rates in that time. And then, of course, we also have to think about the shadow banking sector. So the shadow banking rate is in negative territory, and realistically sharply negative territory at present, and little prospect of it, in fact, doing anything other than continuing to compress as long as the Federal Reserve isn't raising interest rates. And they're not going to raise interest rates in a hurry. And they certainly took a leaf out of some of the points that I've been making, in that some of these things that people are worried about, like lumber prices, are not evidence of new inflation. But they did tend to ignore the kinds of things that do signal inflation. But one thing that's, I think, particularly important here is that the Nasdaq was right in the region of its peak, and it pulled back by about 1% in a knee-jerk fashion after the Fed made their announcement. What I find eerily similar here is that this is very similar to the kind of activity that we saw following other Fed meetings over the years, that the market goes one way initially and then recoups all of the decline and then finishes pretty close to unchanged on the day. We're still in a benign environment overall, and we have negative real interest rates. And it's not just that we have negative real interest rates in the USA, we have negative real interest rates everywhere. So that is highly stimulative. And of course, we have these high growth markets that have been the growth engines of the stock market for most of the last decade, and they're extremely dependent on the availability of credit at very low levels. So any threat to that status quo is going to weigh on those kinds of companies. But then we have the rest of the market. And sometimes it is hard to remember that there are more companies in the world than the 6 largest. And those companies are doing fine. And one thing that we've certainly seen over the last year is that lots of companies have raised more cash, and lots of companies have been able to refinance their debt. So the impending maturity wall that everyone was worried about a year ago is gone, And companies now have a bigger cushion because they're holding more cash. Now, investors are of the belief that companies will continue to buy back their shares, increase their dividends, and give out that cash to investors. But there's also the prospect that companies may start to hold more cash. And to as a virtual insurance policy against worst case scenarios. It can be hoped that the airline sector might decide to hold some more cash for once, instead of constantly relying on bailouts from governments. But if we do start to see companies precautioning, then that's inflationary, because it's one of the thing, or it's a reaction to the threat of inflation. And when people start reacting to the threat, then you get this self-fulfilling prophecy. And I think that's one of the biggest potential sources of inflation that are out there. But then we can think about some of the other ramifications that we've seen in here today. So stocks were relatively unchanged. They are still a little bit overbought relative to the trend mean, so susceptible to some consolidation. And I think that's equally true of oil prices, where oil has rallied about $5 since the beginning of the month. It's now right in the region of 75, and it does have a history of pausing around these increments of $5. So I think it's quite logical that we might anticipate at least some pause and consolidation here. The gold price was in negative territory, and it didn't really rebound off the lows. So the potential threat of raising interest rates is weighing on sentiment towards gold. And now the big question is, are we going to get a higher reaction low? That's going to be the real proof of the pudding that the lows are in fact in. So we're at a rather interesting juncture for the gold price, because the downtrend from the peak in August has been broken. And the price has come back up to test the $1,900 area, and at least twice in the last 6 or 7 months, it's pulled back in a violent manner from that area. And on a weekly basis, it's doing it again in here now. So the success with which gold can hold its lows and rally subsequently is going to be the clear arbiter of whether the correction is in fact over. I rather think that the odds are in favor that of it being over, but we will certainly need to see some evidence of that, and it is for the bulls to prove their case right now. I think there's been a lot of discussion about the Basel III. And we can also think about the fact that people started talking about Basel III and how it relates to gold in the middle of 2019, and that's when gold broke on the upside. And then we are now on the cusp of Basel III being implemented, and gold has been in a corrective phase for the last 6 or 7 months. So there's a logical argument that if the rules aren't changed, then liquidity in the futures market and the options market is going to be impacted by Basel III, and that could have a knock-on effect by bringing prices down in the short term, but up in the medium to long term, because it's not like demand is going to evaporate, but rather that the ability of people to move around in the gold market will be impacted. So we're at an interesting juncture. I do think, though, that as we look at where the inflationary pressures are and where the quantity of money that's being printed internationally and the willingness of almost every government in the world to run deficits and engage in quantitative easing, I mean, if we just remember that back in 2009, quantitative easing was a revolutionary concept. And then, following the European sovereign debt crisis, it became act or it was adopted by the Europeans. And now, in the aftermath of the pandemic, emerging markets are engaging in quantitative easing. So, this willingness to accept extraordinary monetary policy, it's so far hasn't resulted in measurable or the kind of inflation that central banks measure, even though we've had these massive moves in asset prices. Of course, when we start thinking about asset prices, then obviously the big moves that we've had in commodities and in equities are driven by asset price inflation and the decline in the purchasing power of currencies. But the dollar was stronger in here today and rising in a reasonably dynamic manner because it is supporting the view that the Federal Reserve will in fact raise rates at some stage. Just one second to cough. And that's, I think, rather, sorry. That's supportive of the contention that the dollar is starting to put in some support here, and that the Fed will not be the last country in the world to raise interest rates. But they're not going to be the first either, and or at least they haven't been, because some countries have already been raising rates. And this is a dynamic move, so it's at least demonstrating short-term support in the region of the lower side of that range. Then we can think about how all of this is playing out in other markets, because Shanghai A shares have been rather weak of late. And when we look at the CSI 300, well, it's been ranging above the trend mean for the last while, but it was down in a pretty dynamic manner in here today. So there's a lot of machinations going on in China. But perhaps the most important of them is that China had been talking about giving a greater weighting to the market in the economy, and their actions are rather moving in the opposite direction. So they're telling people how to engage in their businesses, and most particularly with regard to the commodity markets. So then, of course, they are weighing on their technology sector as well. So back about a decade ago, China wanted a domestic tech sector. They did everything possible to foster it and to ensure that it grew and protected it from outside competition. And now they don't like it anymore, or at least it served its purpose. And unfortunately, this is not confidence-inducing for investors. So when we look at, for example, Alibaba, the estimated PE is around 21. And we can think about, what the and we're not going to get the price to sales or the ratio information on an ADR. But one thing that we can think about at least is that the valuation is not aggressive. And they don't report, in fact, the price to book or the price to sales. But the debt to assets is only about 8%. And the cash generated to cash required is 6 times. So these are, I think, big are the think they're the kinds of things that stick out to investors, that there might be value there, and it's a big share and it has pulled back. But the question, of course, for investors has to be, how are these companies going to grow? They won't be allowed to grow in future, and if they won't be allowed to grow, then a PE of 20 is expensive. Now, when we think about a company like Microsoft, well, they have a PE of 33. So it's 50% higher than Alibaba's, but there's no question about the growth potential, or at least very little in terms of the threat of antitrust, even though there's a new hawkish person has been appointed to the FTC, then that really hasn't weighed on the performance of these shares. Of course, we have had something of a loss of momentum, but there is still a rivetingly consistent sequence of higher reaction lows in some of the largest companies in the world, and that does act as a support for the wider economy as well. Then, In here today, we saw that that Australia and the UK signed a trade agreement, and there's a lot of different aspects to consider. The first is that it creates an additional export market for Australian agricultural products, and it also ensures that Australia will have a bigger trading partner, and that's certainly welcome considering the strained relationship that it has with China right now. It's also beneficial for the UK because it demonstrates that the UK can form relationships outside the EU. Now, the pound is right in the region of the upper side of its range, and we got a little resistance coming through in here today. And I think it's definitely going to have to hold the region of the trend mean and demonstrate support if this isn't going to turn out to be a somewhat deeper correction overall. This upper dynamic we've seen in the dollar is going to pressure a number of the trends that have been underway now for the last year. So the question of whether we're going to see upside follow through is going to be an important one. Emerging markets, of course, have been among the best performers, and they are still running deficits, and also with negative real interest rates, it's a rather stimulative environment. But international investors are going to be much more attuned to what happens with the dollar. So the emerging markets index is also taking its cue from China. Whereas we can then think about India and Vietnam as being some of the better performing markets in the region. The Indian market was in negative territory today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. The Vietnamese index has also been pausing over the last couple of weeks, but it's still a consistent trend overall. I think that I've been talking about the dollar as being the linchpin for the additional interest to flow into emerging markets and Europe and Japan. But the main point, of course, is that the dollar is one aspect, and of course, the persistence of the upward trend in the growth sector is an additional aspect that will siphon money away from other assets. But we are going to get to a point where growth will start to surprise on the upside in ex-US assets, and that will also then help to encourage investors. Spain is being estimated that it will grow by somewhere in the region of 8 or 9% this year. And the Spanish index is well off its lows and up 50% over the course of the last year. It's still very much within its base formation. So there's certainly an argument that Europe is back in a recovery scenario, and that is equally true for the UK, where inflationary pressures are rising perhaps a little faster than they are in the US. So right now we're seeing a consolidation in the pound, and I suspect that the catalyst for the next recovery in the pound is probably going to be something in the order of inflationary pressures rising and the Bank of England becoming a little bit more hawkish. And it is likely that the UK will raise interest rates before the USA or Europe, and that commodity producers will start to raise interest rates, and that will start to increase the value of their currencies. So we've had a bounce in the dollar, but they're not going to raise interest rates anytime soon. And I do suspect that this rebound will go a little bit further in the short term, but perhaps not very much further in the medium or the long term. I still think that the dollar is going to break on the downside. And of course, that would also suggest that gold will hold its lows and that we're being set up for the next attractive entry opportunity. And I've been rather reticent to increase my own personal position because I've been so discomfited by moving house and unpacking and trying to get set up. So I do anticipate I'm going to be more active trading in the next few months than I have been in the last few. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.